with a guy who was our Monday morning quarterback a good bit of the season. He joins us now, of course, broadcast partner at the Crimson Tide Sports Network. Tyler Watts, Happy New Year. Hope you're doing well.
And a Happy New Year to all y'all.
Hey, Texas announces their new head coach today. It's Charlie Strong. It's not a shock. His name had been mentioned fairly prominently from the start. If they couldn't get their first choice, which we all know was Nick Saban. But you're a guy who knows of Charlie Strong from pretty far back, having been recruited by him when you were coming out of Pelham High School. Tell the story and the connection there.
Yeah, he was actually, and I meant to look this up to see who all was on that coaching staff, but he was actually on the coaching staff up at Notre Dame when I was in high school under Bob Davey. And Urban Meyer was on that staff as well, and I can't remember. That's really the only fellows that I saw, or only coaches that I saw on that recruiting visit. But Charlie Strong was recruited me and my family went up to South Bend and got lost in Michigan, via Michigan. Didn't mean to go to Michigan, but we ended up in Michigan and before going on over to South Bend. And he took the time to show us around for 2 days and took us through the facilities around campus and just did an incredible job. It was really cordial, very personable, and I thought did an outstanding job. One of the better recruiters that I experienced on the recruiting trail. And obviously, I think 2 days after I committed to Alabama, he actually called and said, we would like to offer you a scholarship to come to Notre Dame. And I hated Notre Dame, and I still do to this day, but that's still pretty cool to get a scholarship offer from Notre Dame. So, but he was great, and then he ended up being at South Carolina after my junior and senior year at Alabama. And defensive coordinator there under Lou Holtz, and did a great job. It's a hire that, on the surface, I was like, they couldn't get anybody else. But then the more you kind of dig down into it, I think it's a great hire. I don't know what he'll be like on the political side of that job, having to put up with all that garbage that head coaching position has to. But as far as taking talent and developing it and making it tough-nosed, I think he is as good as they could have gotten.
You know, it's interesting, Tyler, that you say that, because that's the one knock that I hear against him is that, and frankly, I'll just put it this way. I have seen more impressive press conferences than the one he had a few moments ago. It wasn't bad. Wasn't train wreck by any stretch. I have definitely seen worse close to home. But his was it was not the most dynamic that I've heard. And it may be that's the route they needed to go, and they may have, you know, lucked into it from the standpoint of here's a guy that we know is not going to play politics, has no interest in it. You guys go do whatever the heck you want to do. I'm going to coach football and try to make kids better. And that's what they're getting with Charlie Strong based on all accounts.
No, you're right. And let's face it, you're at Texas. You're going to be able to recruit whoever you are because there are so many athletes in that state. You have the name, you have the brand, everybody wants to come there. As long as you don't goof it up, you're going to get talent. And that's really been their problem for the last several years, is not being able to recruit top talent, because I think everybody will tell you, top to bottom on their roster outside the quarterback position, they're as good as anybody in the country. But their development has not been there. And that tough mindset of being a physical football team and winning the tough ones has not been there. And I think that's an element that he will be able to bring to the table.
Tyler Watts, Crimson Tide Sports Network, joining us, of course, former quarterback at the University of Alabama as well. The quarterback position now up for grabs at your alma mater after the Sugar Bowl wraps up and A.J. McCarron's incredible history as the signal caller for the Tide is complete. About as interesting and wide open as it has been, Tyler, I guess, since going into AJ's sophomore year, when we literally went into week one with almost a coin toss between AJ McCarron and Phillip Sims.
I think the only thing that kind of separates that race from this one is the fact that was just a two-man race. This potentially could be a three- or four-person deal of you really don't know who's going to develop over the summer and in fall camp and win that starting job. You know, and we had an interesting call in the post game after the Sugar Bowl loss of along the same lines of who will be that replacement. And I think it was followed up with could this potentially be the end of the Alabama dynasty? And And I think those two kind of go hand in hand. If you kind of look back at Miami, Florida State's run, who else? Texas's run. Kind of the one thing that was a common denominator in all those scenarios was quarterback play dropped off significantly when they went down. And college football has kind of evolved into what pro football is, where it's a quarterback's league. If you've got a good trigger man, someone who can control the line, control the flow of the game, and not make a lot of mistakes, make plays when you have to, you're going to win a lot of football games. So it's real critical as to who emerges as this. Emerges as a starting quarterback next year, and I think that it'll run through fall camp and possibly into the, you know, first game or two, similar to how it was. Just put them in those situations, see whoever comes out on top, and it's a pivotal time, it's a critical time, kind of on how successful Alabama will be in the future, because we know surrounded by them on the defensive side and all the skill positions, they're going to continue to be good and talented, but do we have the guy back there that can control things and not make mistakes?
How much more difficult will it be for David Cornwell, who's coming in, plus he's rehabbing a knee injury, but he's expected to enroll this week. How much more difficult will it be for him to compete, and how far behind the curve is he as opposed to the three guys that redshirted this year?
Well, mentally is really where the difference lies, because all these guys got physical ability and they can throw the ball and all. And, you know, he's has a challenge of overcoming both mental and physical obstacles, obviously with rehabbing the knee and then learning the system. But we've seen before where quarterbacks come in and they're able to get in there and maybe not perfectly run the system in the spring game, but do good enough to not look foolish out there. So, yeah, he's got, you know, tougher row to hoe, so to speak, than the other guys. But I don't know. I mean, it might just be a scenario where he just needs to take the year, get that knee good and strong, and learn as much as he can and try to compete next year.
Blake Sims is a guy that people have talked about since he came on campus. Well, he'll get a shot, but he's probably going to be moved to either running back or secondary. And yet he kept playing the quarterback position at a high enough level that Nick Saban kept him right there. Are we overlooking him? But I know his style is different. His strengths are different from what we've had throughout Nick Saban's tenure.
Everybody's writing him off too quickly. They're automatically are saying, well, he's an option quarterback. Well, when he came in the backup position, they were throwing the ball around a little bit. And granted, it was at a time and a place in the game where the game was pretty much secure, but I think he's capable, and if he was put in that spotlight and got more reps and got the opportunity to be the guy, could he continue to develop? Now, would the offense look different? Potentially. Is that necessarily bad? Not necessarily. I saw Clemson and Ohio State both do a really nice job of running that style of offense, probably more read option than what Alabama would do, but having that wrinkle in there might not be a bad thing. And it doesn't have to be a majority of your offense, but just the ability. You know, A.J. did a great job in the pocket, but one thing that he was lacking, and I don't think anybody will disagree, including A.J., was the fact that he was not as mobile as what Blake Sims or some of the other guys on the roster potentially could be. So that makes it even that much more challenging from the defense perspective. But I wouldn't write him off just yet. Give him an opportunity to get out there and compete versus these guys, and let's just find out who's the best one.
Would you think that T.J. Yeldon or Derrick Henry is the starting running back going into spring drills?
Yes.
Or will it even matter?
Oh, you want me to choose between those two?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You phrase it as
drills, one. You're running
one
ones. Who's going to be the one?
Who will be the starter? Okay. I think that he will stick with T.J. Saban is extremely loyal when he finds someone with a track record, and I would not be surprised at all if TJ continued to be the starter going in, even as great of a game as Derrick Henry had. I think that he will stick with TJ. TJ Yeldon was banged up the last several games, and even in that Sugar Bowl, from my perspective here in Pelham, Alabama, I thought his legs looked tired. He was kind of fumbling over his feet. He didn't look 100%. Some of those cuts we've seen him make over the years were not clean and precise, and he wasn't getting full speed as quickly as what we've seen in the past. So give him a little opportunity to rest up. What I think you'll see is I think they need to go a little bit more balanced, rotate those guys around a little more. And I think as Derrick Henry, Alti Tenpenny, Kenyon Drake continue to develop, we'll probably see that where some of those other guys are getting more carries and not putting such a load on T.J. Yeldon.
Tyler, I agree with you. Coach Saban is loyal, but he also talks constantly about the trust factor. And you said the key word, not in this context. You said he was fumbling over his feet, even banged up. It wasn't so much the yardage or the cuts. It was the fact that he did fumble again. And he has had quite a track record of that in some key situations. Kenyon Drake as well. That's the reason I asked the question, not based on what Derrick Henry did, even though what he did was highly impressive, but more so on what T.J. Yeldon continues to do in some tough situations.
Remember a couple years back that we saw Eddie Lacy as a freshman and a sophomore do an incredible job running the ball between the 20s. Once he got down into the red zone, he always seemed to fumble. And it cost him some playing time early in his career. But he got better over time. And I'm not going to say the same thing won't happen with T.J. Yeldon. Continue to learn from what you've done in the past, and maybe he can cut down that. Because Eddie Lacy, we all know, did a much better job his last 2 years of holding on to that football and not turning it over. But I think you're right. T.J., what do you have, 4 or 5 fumbles this year? The problem was, though, and you don't want any fumbles, but the problem with them, were you about to score? He fumbled at bad times in the football game. He did the same thing last year in one of those drives versus A&M. So that's something he's got to improve on, or I think he does face the threat of losing carries. But that's not to say that it won't happen, because we've seen with other backs. They fumbled early in their career, and they got better with time.
Championship games tonight, and as sickening as it is to see a BCS game without Alabama in it, what do you think we will see tonight between Florida State and Auburn?
This is an interesting one, and I hate going against my gut, because my gut tells me that Auburn's going to win. And I told my wife, Jana, after that Georgia catch, I said, this is Auburn's year. I mean, you don't see these type of plays happen without it. I'm not going to say destiny, because it ain't necessarily destiny, but everything just continues to fall in place for them. Florida State's a good football team. I'm not as high on them as I think as everybody else is, because I think their only impressive win really was against Clemson. And that was a good win, but when they had Clemson beat, they continued to keep their foot on the pedal and ran the score, continued to throw it, and kept the first-teamers in well into the fourth quarter, which kind of created a larger margin of victory than it potentially would have been if we had been playing them or somebody else, because we'd have called the dogs off. They didn't. They're good, but they haven't played a good tight game to this point. I think Auburn's going to do a good job of keeping it close. And you always wonder how players are going to perform when it gets crunch time, when they're not up 20 points. And I think that Auburn will be able to keep it close. I really do. If we couldn't stop them, I don't see how anybody in the country can stop them, and that includes Florida State. But we'll see. We'll see what the layoff that has done to both offenses, if they're able to click. If Jameis Winston comes out and he's on fire early on, well, I think that gives Florida State a pretty good chance of winning this ball game going away. But if he comes out and struggles early on, like in my opinion he did versus Florida, and even against Duke, a little flat for a good quarter and a half, I think that bodes well for Auburn.
You and I saw Jameis Winston in high school. We broadcast high school games on My68 throughout the course of the season. And we saw him a time or two. Knew he was good. No way to project that he would be this good this quickly. But what stands out to me through the bowl stuff and some of the things the latter stages of the year, you understand why Nick Saban doesn't allow freshmen to talk very often, don't you?
Yeah, you do. It's for their benefit as well as everybody else's. Let's give them an opportunity to kind of learn what to say before we give them a microphone. But, hey, teach his own. And Jimbo Fisher says, well, I want to put my guy out there and promote him. And tell everybody, the rest of the world, all these other recruits, they got a chance to come in here and be something special.
He's not lacking for confidence, is he?
No,
talking about
not.
Jameis,
he
or Jimbo was. Either, but Jameis Chris? Is who I was referencing.
Do what now?
I said that goes for Jimbo as well, but I was actually referencing Jameis Winston when I said that.
Oh, I know. Yeah, he's extremely confident. But, you know, I mean, there's always been a fine line between confidence and arrogance, and you got to ride that fence and go back and forth constantly. The game has a way of of bringing you back in line when you get a little too arrogant. And it'll be interesting if Auburn, or if he can back up some of his comments and that confidence that he has, and if Auburn's able to put him in his place.